RCR with Paul Brennan.
Michael Arben is an advisor for Senator Ralph Babette, the United Australia Party Senator for Victoria, Australia. And we've asked Michael to come on RCR to talk about the hate crimes bill, which many of you will know passed the Australian Senate last week. And he joins us now. Michael, thanks for coming on RCR.
No, thanks for having me, Paul. Appreciate your work and appreciate the time.
Thank you. Okay, some main points. This bill created new offences for threatening force or violence against targeted groups, including sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, intersex status, disability, lowering the threshold of prosecution from intention to recklessness. Federal Labor agreed to coalition Liberal National demands for mandatory minimum jail sentences for terror crimes and the display of hate symbols. The bill states, we'll get to the end in just a moment, the bill states that an offence occurs where a reasonable person who is a member of the targeted group would fear that the threat will be carried out. The bill removes the good faith defence. Just 6 out of 76 senators opposed this bill, which was fast-tracked through the Senate with very little debate allowed. I think we just had to set the table there, Michael. The obvious question is there any need for this?
No. Simple answer, Paul. We don't often get that in politics, but the answer is no. There are existing laws in Australia that are more than sufficient to deal with terrorism, violence, threats of violence, all of these things that are mentioned in the bill. Unfortunately, it's titled the Hate Crimes Bill. I think it's a hate speech bill, and it censors speech that government hates. It was pretty much a no-brainer for our team opposing this bill because the unintended consequences long-term are as long as your arm. It's broad, it's vague, it's a capture-all, and it imposes really harsh minimum mandatory sentences for almost thought/speech crime. You don't actually have to commit a crime. You just have to be perceived as leading towards violence or as provoking violence, which I think is madness.
The motivation for pushing ahead with this is what? Because, you know, these people who are in government now, they're not going to be there forever, yeah, for very long. So the cover that this gives them to censor, I don't know, anything that affects their political chances, I can see that. But it's a very short-term thing. What is the driver to tighten up in this way, do you think? And where is it coming from?
I wish I could get in their heads and behind closed doors and see the discussions, Paul. But, you know, publicly they'll say it's to combat anti-Semitism. Well, existing laws are more than sufficient for that. You know, if people are putting out ridiculous statements about the Jews or anything like that, there are existing laws and existing crimes that more than easily capture that. The motivation to include words such as sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, intersex status, and disability, as soon as I read that part, all of a sudden we knew it wasn't just about anti-Semitism anymore. It's all of those buzzwords and isms that come through from the globalist organizations all the time. This is a way that maybe not immediately, I can't see this new law being, you know, forced on us with a heavy hand right now, but sometime into the future, this new bill will be used against the Australian people for an unintended purpose and for a different agenda. And we just don't know what it will be, but we know that it's broad enough now to capture almost anything that the government wants.
So you get a chilling effect.
Mm-hmm. Self-censoring is what this is going to do. The Australian people, now that they're aware of this bill, which they didn't have much time to be aware of it, it was rushed through both houses in the same day. The Senate was gagged. They suspended standing orders like they do all the time. The debate was limited to, I think, an hour from memory. There's a lot of bills that went through the last
time. Back up the truck. Hour for something as awesomely consequential as this?
Yep. And often zero time is given to debate bills in Australia. This is the thing that most people around the world and even in Australia don't know. I sit there and I watch and I yell and I scream in Parliament as they're fast-tracking through sometimes a dozen bills in a day with no debate. this is one example, and this is a very consequential example of the ability of the major parties to do what they call suspending standing orders, which is essentially making up their own rules for the day and fast-tracking bills through without debate. And if there is no debate, then the benefit to the government is that the general public becomes less aware of what they're doing because debate triggers media, triggers awareness within the people. If there's no debate, it's very hard for us minor parties or independents to get the story out so there can be public pressure applied to the government. So they know that time is not their friend. If they can fast track things through and not allow that public debate to occur, their agenda will pass. And the thing is, Paul, once a bill passes, we're talking today, but we're the exception. Usually the story goes quiet, it's dead, it's happened, it's never talked about again until it's abused.
I watched Clive Palmer yesterday on the timeline of this interview anyway, and he came out and said it. Australia and probably us and like sort of Western democracies are kind of in a uniparty situation where there really is no delineation. There is a lockstep. I mean, one takes over from the other and there's a few fuzzies around the edges. He's right, isn't he?
He's absolutely right, Paul. The faces in the seats may change slightly, but the faces behind the scenes in the bureaucracy, they don't change a bit. And we know that these types of bills are drafted by the bureaucracy, the faceless men that never seem to change, even when government changes from Liberal to Labor or Labor to Liberal. And policy-wise, they really are in lockstep. So, in Australia, both major parties, the Liberal Party, which is the so-called Conservative Party, and the Labor Party, are both really going hard on censorship. It's really concerning.
Well,
We've
is there a
got.
political base they're appealing to, Michael? Because that's why
No.
politicians do things.
I think what they're doing is they're entrenching their own power. Does the base matter when you're guaranteed to get elected now or sometime in the next couple of terms anyway? Not so much. I think they have departed the will of the Australian people. And I do think that the Australian people are far too relaxed about politics with where, we still believe generally that, either that politics is not worth engaging in or that we can't change it. But we truly can. There's just not enough Australian people that are actively fighting back. We are too quiet and far too tolerant of power abuses, which is happening every single day in the Senate. I'm happy to say that they are abusing their power. They are circumventing a democratic process, and often they're not giving the people a say via their elected members. They're silencing them.
What's that Bob Dylan song, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall? One day it will. Let's go through some of those key points I started with and the language. Threatening force or violence. What's the difference between force and violence?
Yeah, good question. I can't tell you. That's more of
I
a
know,
legal
but
question. But
there's wiggle room there, isn't there? So
well,
you can.
yeah, and the thing is, probably what's more important than the words force and violence is they replaced intent with recklessness.
Yeah, I was going
So
to
if
get
I
to
was
that.
to say something in a public sphere or even privately that was deemed to be reckless, and even though that was not my intent, if it was reckless and it potentially could lead to force or violence, I'm
And how do you
captured
know
for it.
that? And how do you know that? How do you know
Exactly
that?
right. That's subjective. That's something, especially when you text message, right? Often people will perceive a text message wrongly because you can't read body language, you can't interpret someone's intent. So if I wrote a text message sarcastically, but it was deemed to be reckless, and potentially leading towards force or violence, I could be captured under this law, which is insane because context matters, intent matters, but it no longer does. It's been wiped from the act.
I was just thinking as you're saying that, I can imagine the scenario. It sounds a little out there, but you've got, a couple of people, maybe even a couple. Maybe one's from some country and one's from another. And you've got all their personal communications. And you say something, or the relationship's dissolving away. You say something that could be taken a particular way. And you can run off and kind of have that person for that. I mean, under this, potentially. Am I sort of taking it too far?
We won't really know until it's tested in the courts, Paul, but no, I don't think you are. We're worried about that exact thing. And then, probably
So
what's
who's going to talk to
really
each other, honestly, if
correct.
that's, yeah.
And the offence captures, I'm going to list those categories again because I think it's important. Race, religion, nationality, national or ethnic origin, political opinion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, intersex status, and disability. This is not just about anti-Semitism. This is including all of the isms. And really, you're right, it is an anti-free speech bill. The major parties in this country, they hate free speech. It's so obvious. And one thing I will mention, Paul, is that in the final week of sitting last week, Senator Babbitt introduced a constitutional amendment bill, which would give the Australian people the opportunity via referendum to enshrine free speech in our constitution, because we believe that actions like this deserve fight back. And what better way than to give the Australian people the opportunity to decide whether we should actually have free speech enshrined in our constitution, because right now we don't. We only have an implied right to free speech. We don't have a right to free speech.
I think we're probably some kind of similar here. All right, and also the bill removes the good faith defense. So what does that mean exactly?
Often we will say something in good faith that's not intended to promote violence or hatred or harm towards an individual. And a judge will take that into account when they're determining the sentencing or whether someone is guilty or not. And that's been wiped. It's done. It's removed. So you can no longer take into the fact that someone said something in good faith. That's gone. And now the judges also had the ability to determine the sentence removed as well for a number of offences. There are mandatory minimum sentences between 1 and 5 years from memory for various offences. So that's something that the Australian Labor Party, which is the left side of politics in Australia, has always opposed, the mandatory minimum sentences. But the so-called Conservatives, Peter Dutton's party, they pressured Labor into agreeing to minimum mandatory sentences in this bill. So the Conservatives, the free market, freedom, so-called supposed to be freedom party, are the ones that are forcing mandatory minimum sentences now.
That uniparty thing again, perhaps. Okay, and where a reasonable person who is a member of the targeted group would fear that the threat will be carried out. Well, I'm thinking in our case of what happened in a certain park in Auckland over a year ago, where women who were speaking, as women like to do, were attacked basically by a mob of trans crazies, actually. Reasonable person who is a member of a targeted group? In that case, there aren't any. There are no
I reckon
reasonable
this
people
bill's a
there.
dream for lawyers, isn't it? They're going to run amok with this one. It's messy. What is reasonable? All of these terms
And
are
who is
objective.
reasonable?
I have no idea. There is
Yeah.
no objective way to say what a reasonable person is because I'm probably deemed rather unreasonable to some people, but others see me as reasonable. I believe that, things like gender is binary, and I would be seen to be unreasonable by some people for that purpose, but by those that believe in biology, I'm seen to be reasonable. It's impossible to say.
I mean, I might be a narcissist who's a damn good liar who comes across as so reasonable.
Correct. You could be a really good salesman. You could be a snake oil salesman and get away with it. But
Yeah.
to someone else who can see through that, you're unreasonable.
A lot of this has come out of anti-Semitism. Is there a wave of anti-Semitism rippling through Australia right now?
I don't believe so. I've not seen any evidence of in my everyday life. There is some. There are some people out there saying some ridiculous things. That is true. And they will face existing laws and existing punishments that exist. But I think the Australian people are generally quite reasonable. They're relatively balanced in their views. And I think it's just another example of politicians seeing a small issue and then turning it into a big issue, creating some fear and using that crisis as a vehicle to then further legislate and entrench power. It happens all the time, and I have the greatest respect for the Jewish people have been through an awful lot and whatever, but I don't believe that putting in hate speech laws does anything to combat someone who has an extreme view. Silencing speech is not a good way to address an issue within society. It's not going to create a more cohesive society. It's actually probably going to send bad ideas underground and make them bigger. I think that in a good democratic society, sunlight is the best disinfectant. If someone's going to say something stupid, let them say it publicly and let them be condemned and attacked by their peers. I think that's a good thing.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head, perhaps, Michael, and that is the obvious attitude is that the average person doesn't have the wherewithal to understand basic human concepts that they've come to know over a lifetime of experience, and they can't be trusted. So somebody says something and they are immediately vulnerable to be completely taken in by that one meme or one sentence that could change their entire attitude or view on life and make them dangerous. Come on.
Madness. And then Paul, what this bill would do would send them underground, so they become more and more entrenched in that echo chamber and become fully indoctrinated. Whereas should they be free to say what they think publicly, I'm pretty sure those around them are going to pull them aside and say, hey mate, let's have a, what's the reasoning behind what you're saying? Let's talk through that. Like, let their peers and their family and everyone around them help them through and educate them if they need to. I think that's fine, but you don't need to put them in jail for 5 years. It's mad.
What's the media been saying, mainstream media been saying? Have they been supportive?
Not much. Not much. Headlines saying, that the bill passed bipartisan support to combat anti-Semitism, et cetera. The alternate media has been quite good, but limited in reach. The story's practically dead now, Paul, because the bill passed. So it was probably a story sort of on the day, and it was more like, are the Labor Party going to agree to the Liberal Party's demands for mandatory minimum sentencing? That was the messaging. It wasn't, hey, they've thrown a whole bunch of stuff into this bill that's got nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It's around gender and gender identity and political views and all sorts of other things. And by the way, the judge has now got no discretion. They're going to throw you away for reckless speech. It's pretty insane. I personally don't think the law will be tested for a while. Things like this don't usually get tested straight away, but I am concerned about the long-term effects on free speech in Australia.
The longer it's not contested, the more it sort of bakes itself in the consciousness, or people, it sort of dissolves away and people forget about it, but it lurks.
That's right. And the sad thing is, Paul, that we have a federal election likely within the next 2 months in Australia. And often when a really bad bill passes at an election, you might have the two major parties on opposite sides, so the people can vote to repeal the bill if they don't like it. Sadly, in this scenario, the vast majority of members of parliament of the next parliament are going to be of the two parties that voted for this bill. So there will not be sufficient numbers. So I think the strategy's maybe got to be around sort of lobbying them to repeal the ridiculous elements of the bill, which are including all of those terms that are not relevant to their intent.
Does that explain the fast tracking?
I dare say it would, because it's done, it's dead, it's buried, and now it's no longer an election issue. They will move on and they'll say, we've done something to combat anti-Semitism. And in Australia, Paul, the do something attitude of governments, it do something no matter what it is, seems to be their game plan all the time. During COVID, we saw it. They had very little evidence for nearly every measure they put in force, but they just wanted to be seen to be doing something no matter what it is. Something is better than doing nothing. But in my opinion, the government did nothing for 3 years. I'm pretty sure Australia would become a pretty good place, because we'd work out our own problems and we would have less laws, less restrictions, and we'd be more of a free democracy where the people actually communicate and interact with each other rather than seeking government to fix their problems.
Well, history tells us, doesn't it, that trying to unpick it later is usually more of a hair-raising, scary task than dealing
and
with
there's,
it.
You know, it's not like America where you can have a president come in and issue a bunch of executive orders and really change things pretty quickly. In Australia, the wheels turn pretty quickly to legislate, and I can't remember the last time a bill was repealed. They just don't do it. They don't unwind. They just add layer upon layer upon layer of legislation.
All right. So, let's get it clear. There's the one we've just been talking about, but there's also the Victoria bill. Have I got that confused? The Victorian bill?
I believe there was a hate crimes bill in New South Wales last night that passed. I just caught a quick look of it on X this morning. I haven't seen the details, but I'm pretty sure that various states now are also imposing similar bills. The trouble we have is the federal and state governments in Australia duplicate an awful lot of stuff. So federal government initially at the original constitution was supposed to have limited, very limited powers, and the states would do most things. But now the feds dip their toe in an awful lot of legislation that's duplicated at a state level as well. So it's messy. But you're right, this is entrenched Australia-wide. Every government's going to be doing something to add more and more rules to be seen to be doing something.
Well, I think the Victorian bill includes also the words reasonable or word reasonable in about the same place. So, yeah,
And I
that's
think
it.
government's quite unreasonable most of the time, so maybe they're in trouble. Who knows? Who knows, Paul?
All right. Any other points to make about this before we end the chat and we all
No.
process what's happening to our beautiful neighbour, Australia? And also, we're on guard here because it's a model for others.
Well, my message, I think, to the Australian people and to Kiwis is that free speech is the cornerstone of democracy. So I think we really do need to fight hard as a people to preserve and to entrench free speech in our nations, because if we are censored and we're unable to speak freely without fear of punishment or minimum jail terms, we will lose our democracy as we know it. And that is a fact. I think we should look to America, and we should apply a lot of pressure on our governments from what we're seeing happening in the US at the moment, because there are some really good changes. They are self-correcting an awful lot compared
Yeah, and
to
we're in front
where
of
we're
us
sitting.
all. We're witnessing that. We know
That's
what's
right.
going
And
on.
I'd probably call out to President Trump to wave some big sticks at our nations over the free speech
Tough
issue.
love.
We need it. We need to be punished for acting in an anti-democratic way and for censoring our people. And whether that is the threat of a tariff or the threat of a deal not going through, I think that's fair enough. Our governments are out of step with what a democratic society should be. So we need to correct, and maybe we need some help from our bigger friend in the US to make sure that we can do that. Because as it currently stands, our politicians, as you saw, 6 out of 76 oppose this bill. They don't have the will to up to really truly preserve free speech. They would rather just make little rules to entrench their power at the moment.
They've all kind of turned out to be the same sort of person, haven't they? It's interesting how it's got to a cookie cutter, you know.
Career politicians, they are, Paul. They love their jobs and they love power. And quite frankly, too many of them have spent their entire lifetime in that system, in the public system, where they're just sucking off taxpayers and kissing butt and climbing that ladder slowly. And that's not a good thing. That needs to be disrupted. We need more real people in politics as well.
And just to finish up on what can United Australia and I guess now Clive coming in on the scene, what do you just keep banging away and hope to
That's
get
right.
some kind of
We've
cover?
got a big cliff of bureaucracy in front of us, and we've got lots of friends. It's Senator Babbitt, and we've got like One Nation, and we've got Senator Rennick, and a few good guys in there that are really pushing hard. It's chipping away that cliff with your little pickaxe, and really, it's the elected members, but politicians won't save you. Politicians won't change it. It's got to be from the bottom up. The people need to unite. And need to continually push back. The squeaky wheel does get the grease, and what the left does well is they are persistent. The Australian Greens are very powerful in Australia because somehow they've managed to build sort of 12% of the vote, thereabouts. They get 12 senators elected. They're even getting houses in the lower house now, and really they are the tail that wags the dog. When the Labor Party's in power, they need the Greens' votes to get bills across the line. So guess what? There are Greens influences on all of these bills. The
But green should
minor.
be that's from being a hippie. You want everything free. This is
No,
crazy.
the Greens have become the watermelons. They're red on the inside and green on the
Yeah.
outside now, Paul. But the minor right, the more conservative parties, so the ones that don't vote for the Liberal Party who are in the middle, That totals 12% of the vote too, but unfortunately at the moment the people aren't preferencing properly and the votes aren't flowing to get enough senators elected, and we also have an awful lot of parties crowding that space. So voters, be smart, give all those parties a chance before you vote for a major party. That helps. But also apply an awful lot of pressure to the major parties. They get away with this stuff. There's only political nerds like me that follow this stuff. So we need more and more public pressure. Just keep calling, emailing, harassing in a nice way, but keep the pressure on because they do give in to that eventually. But we're just not loud enough at the moment.
And just quickly, what did Pauline Hanson do? She
She abstained from the vote on this
abstained
one.
something over that mandatory
Yeah, so I can't remember
loyalty.
exactly how they explained it. So the ones that voted against the bill that are sort of conservative senators are Senator Babbitt, Senator Antic, and Senator Rennick. And Senator Antic, I'll give him a hat tip because he's a Liberal Party member, but he crossed the floor on his own. So that deserves an awful lot of credit. Deeply respect that. Senator Hanson and Senator Roberts chose to abstain, and don't want to misrepresent them, but I think that their reasoning was that they agreed with some stuff, the anti-Semitism stuff, but they didn't agree with the extra details in the bill, so they chose to just not vote as to whether supporting or opposing it. That's their call. Like, our view in our office is bad legislation should never be passed through parliament, so no legislation is better than bad legislation. So we'll always vote no if there's anything wrong with the bill, because we don't believe that, any laws should pass that aren't perfect. It's the Senate's job. We're the House of Review. And if there's something wrong with it, we've got to vote no.
Been really interesting chatting with you, Michael Arben, who is an advisor for Senator Ralph Babett, United Australia Party Senator for Victoria. Thanks for coming on RCR, Michael.
Thanks, Paul. Keep up the great work.